All right. Good morning, everyone. Let's go ahead and get started. Good morning again, and welcome to the Administrative and Finance Committee meeting for Thursday, February 26, 2026. I am Chair Abdullahi, and this meeting is called to order. I would like to announce and warmly welcome Director Kirschbaum as the new Vice Chair for the ANF Committee. We are thrilled to have her bring her expertise, her leadership, fresh perspectives to our committee's work, and we look forward to your valuable contributions to the ANF Committee, Director. Thank you. All right, Nicole, will you please call the roll?
Chair Abdullahi?
Present.
Vice Chair Rant?
Here.
Vice Chair Kirschbaum?
Here.
Directors Acosta? Douglas?
Here.
Hilliker?
Here.
Morrison, Norman,
here.
Quaylen, Roback, Sanchez, Serrano,
here.
Whitburn,
here.
Williams,
here.
Chair Abdullahi, you have a quorum of the committee.
Thank you so much, Nicole. As we discuss the items of the agenda, I will be calling on directors who push their speaker button. Please limit your comments to matters not already addressed and state all your points when you have a chance to speak so we can move through our agenda. Are there any additions to the agenda?
There are none.
All right. At this time, I'd like to ask if there are any public speakers wishing to comment on any item listed on the ANF committee agenda, please.
Calling on public comment for matters on the ANF agenda or within the jurisdiction of the committee. If there are public speakers online, please raise your hand through the Zoom app or press star 9 if listening by phone. I see none.
All right, thank you. All right, from our chair's report, Sabrina Brown, Acting Administrative Services Manager in the Finance Department, has been elected as the chair of the San Diego chapter for the California Association of Public Procurement Officials. This is a significant achievement and a well-deserved recognition of Sabrina's hard work and dedication to our field. Please join me in congratulating Sabrina on this remarkable achievement. All right, so we are having a little bit of a technical difficulty. The queue is not working. If you wish to speak, please, on any of the items, please feel free to raise your hand and we will call on you that way. When technology fails, the human alternatives do not fail. Are there any directors' comments? All right, seeing no hands raised, there are two items on the consent calendar: staff recommendation to note and file the monthly treasurer's report, as well as adopting the benefit summaries regarding CalPERS compliance. Are there any questions or comments? Seeing no hand raised, do I have a motion to approve the consent calendar?
So moved, Serrano.
All right, so I saw a hand from Vice Chair Arant, and then also noted from Chair Serrano. So any second? Sorry, I went that out of order. So
I'll second.
All right. So motion by Vice Chair Arant and seconded by Chair Serrano. We have a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? All right. The item passes. We have one presentation item today, and I will now hand it over to Lisa Marie Harris for the Securities Law Municipal Disclosure Training. Take it away.
All right. Good morning, Director Abdullahi, or Chair Abdullahi, and Board of Directors, Lisa Marie Harris. So this is an annual disclosure training that we offer. The securities laws are the governing laws, federal laws that govern our debt when we issue debt into the market. And typically we like to do this every year just to give you a refresher and then also for new board of directors to understand their fiduciary responsibilities. We do have over $2 billion worth of debt, so it's really critical that you understand your own fiduciary role as a board of director. And so we have our disclosure counsel, Shepherd, is going to give that training. They've been our disclosure counsel for almost 10 years, and they're going to provide you an overview of what the security laws are. what your fiduciary responsibilities are, as well as the federal securities laws themselves. And they'll also go through different anti-fraud case studies as well, just to give you an overview. So feel free to be engaged with this discussion. I encourage you to ask questions. There is no stupid question. So please don't be afraid to ask Tim anything you want about disclosure law. And so with that, I'm gonna turn it over to Tim.
Hello, my name's Tim Reimers. I'm a partner at Shepherd. And I'm joined by my colleague, Kennedy Klein, and we're grateful for the opportunity today to talk to you about securities law and your obligation with respect to the same. As Lisa Marie indicated, we're happy to answer questions. You can raise your hand during the presentation, or we'll make time at the end as well. Although she did say there's no stupid questions. One time I was on a tour of Windsor Castle, and they did ask, one of the people asked why they built it so close to the airport. So I'll challenge the premise, but here I don't think we'll have those same issues. So Kennedy is going to begin our training after I give a little introduction. I've introduced ourselves. The background information is it's important that you get training on these. A lot of the issues around securities law and your obligations and the agency's obligations with respect to the same have to do with acting reasonably and being diligent and that sort of thing. And this training is part of the process of doing that. The goals of this training is to get you to know the framework for what we're doing in helping you create your securities law documents and comply with securities obligations for the Water Authority. Kennedy.
Okay. So first and foremost, as board members of the authority, you have certain fiduciary obligations to the board. So there are a host of them. The big three are these three on the screen. So the duty of care, the duty of loyalty, and duty of obedience. The duty of care, we can think of this sort of as due diligence, asking questions where needed, digging into things when something might feel off, not taking things at face value. The duty of loyalty is acting in the best interest of the authority, even when that might conflict with your own personal interests or other external interests. And the duty of obedience is complying with legal and regulatory reporting requirements. So as we talk about these securities laws today, they're important because they enable you all to fulfill these fiduciary obligations. So why is disclosure necessary? At base, it's disclosure is necessary because the authority issues securities on the public market, right? So the authority issues securities, bonds, commercial paper, and often ask for significant sums of money from investors. So it's important that you disclose all that information to investors, have a level playing field so everyone knows where their money is going, what they're investing in. And it's also important because all of your disclosures will be the first exhibit A in any SEC enforcement action. So you really want to make sure that everything is disclosed to the extent possible. Okay, so these are the main statutes of the federal securities laws. Tim and I won't bore you all with the specifics of the laws, but generally, this Section 17A and Rule 10.5B, they underpin the anti-fraud rules. They apply to all sales and offers of securities, be they public or private. And then Rule 15C212 is specific to municipal issuers and requires ongoing disclosures to be made to investors after their initial investment. So these are really the core laws that underpin the anti-fraud doctrines we'll be talking about today. Mm-hmm. Okay, so all of the laws on the previous screen basically boil down to this principle, which is that you cannot mislead investors, be that by making a material misstatement or a material omission from any of your disclosures. So anything that would be misleading, such that it would cause fraud or deceit on the part of the purchaser or the investor. And this anti-fraud doctrine is at its core meant to protect the integrity of the public market as a whole. Okay, so what does material mean? So as you heard in the last slide, it's the law requires you to not make any material misstatements or material omissions. So we have to know what material means, right? So the common standard for materiality comes from a Supreme Court case where the Supreme Court held that information was material if it had a substantial likelihood that a reasonable investor, so not any investor, a reasonable investor would consider the information important in deciding whether to make their investment. So in making this determination of what material is, it's context dependent, right? So it depends on all the facts and circumstances at play. But when it's looked at, when the courts are looking at this, it's usually on a retroactive basis, right? After everything is said and done, hindsight is 20/20. So that's why conservative, proactive disclosure is really the best practice. Next one. Okay, so when do the anti-fraud rules apply? Really, they apply anytime the authority is speaking to the public market. So that applies to, of course, new offerings, those initial disclosures, the offering statements that you make, but they also apply to continuing disclosures that you make on an annual basis or a reoccurring basis. They apply to any public statements that are made. So any public communications, any press releases, any statements that are made by board members or staff members, directors of the Water Authority or by member agencies. So anything that could be really characterized as the authority speaking to the market. So the takeaway here is really to be cautious because even informal statements that are made by you all as individuals can be considered as disclosures if they're reasonably relied on by an investor. So it's important to keep in mind. Okay, so now that we know the background of the rules, it's important to understand what the consequences are. So as we talked about, the purpose of these laws is to prevent fraud and misrepresentation, really to protect the market. And the SEC has been very clear, especially in recent years, about enforcing that directive, right? So the SEC can bring enforcement actions for violations of the anti-fraud rules themselves. And under one of the rules that we discussed, 10b-5, individual plaintiffs can bring lawsuits as well. And there can be severe penalties, right? They can result in all the penalties on here. In some cases, they can result in very large fines, civil defense costs of defending that case. They can result in reputational harm, rating downgrades, all of those things at the entity level. So they're important to keep in mind, and they apply even if the misrepresentation was unintentional, even if it didn't actually result in any financial harm or default, the SEC can still enforce those. So all of those things are important to keep in mind. And in that same vein, the consequences aren't limited just to the Water Authority as an entity. So board members, department personnel can be held liable and subject to all of those same penalties, fines, injunctions, and the like. So that's really important to keep in mind. That's why really personal diligence and engagement is critical for you all as individuals, as well as at the entity level. Okay, so this slide, we wanted to talk a little bit about some of the examples and patterns that the SEC has been paying attention to. So they brought a number of enforcement actions for various issues. And a lot of these start as process issues, right? So not updating disclosures, not reporting material events as they come, failing to have adequate procedures in place and the like. And as we discussed previously, the penalties can be severe. So to color this with an example, a few years ago, Sweetwater Union High School issued $28 million in bonds, and the SEC found that they misrepresented their financial condition by projecting a year-end surplus when they actually were engaged in deficit spending, significant deficit spending. And the SEC charged the school district as well as the CFO themselves. And in the end, the school was enjoined from participating in any future offerings. And the CFO paid out $28,000, themselves. So not to fear monger, but really to underscore the importance of training and documenting your processes. Turn it over to Tim.
Yeah, thank you, Kennedy. A takeaway from that is that the defenses for securities fraud generally revolve around responsible actions and due diligence. So we're going to talk a lot about your process and building out reasonable processes and having reasonable reliance and taking reasonable steps to do things to make sure that you don't have misstatements or omissions. And as Candy mentioned, we have Defense Exhibit A. The Defense Exhibit A is when you issue new bonds, you'll be given an opportunity to take a look at the preliminary official statement. This is like when you invest in your own securities, sometimes you get a prospectus or an offering memo. For those, the prospectus in a municipal securities offering is called the preliminary official statement. It tells investors what the terms of those bonds are. It tells them about how the authority works and what the expectations for repayments are. It has a long list of risk factors and things along those lines. But the purpose is really to, as Kennedy had mentioned, is to create a fair marketplace where people are all very reasonably informed, have the information that they need in order to make an investment decision. Your responsibility there is to take reasonable steps in preparing this offering document. The SEC has made it very clear that the offering document is the authority's offering document, but they've also made it clear that you can have reasonable reliance if you have reasonable processes in place. Along with the preliminary official statement, which is a pre-marketing or a pre-sale activity, a marketing activity, it'll describe these things. It'll come to the board for approval. We'll take it on a road show. We'll often have slides that the underwriters go and take to New York and try to sell these bonds. And then once we've priced it, we get the final official statement. And really all that happens there is we put the pricing information into that final official statement. Your official statements describe your securities, describe the security. So securities are your revenue bonds, your commercial paper, that sort of thing. It describes the security and sources of payment. What is pledged to those things? Do you have a mortgage? No, you don't have a mortgage. You are pledging your revenues to the repayment of those bonds. It discloses the risks, as I was saying, and the investment considerations. You have a very thoughtful group of folks who you've hired to work through what the risk factors are in this marketplace right now, both structural in just in the bond world, but also what are the risks of water pricing and all the considerations that go around that. And the Water Authority does a very good job of that, and they've hired professionals, disclosure counsel. They hire a very sophisticated set of bankers and of financial advisors to help get this to land in the right place. And a well-prepared official statement, as it says here, functions as your primary defense against claims that you have violated the anti-fraud rules when issuing your securities. The Water Authority is responsible for the completeness and accuracy of the official statement. While you've delegated those responsibilities to Lisa Marie's department and to the folks that you've hired, and you can reasonably rely on those, you want to make sure that you have processes in place to check that they're doing the right things. And you ought to read these documents. First of all, they're really interesting. I spend my life writing them, and man, they're fantastic. It's a page turner, really. Like, I gave my wife one for Christmas, and she never slept as, no, I slept as well. But if you're in the water business, it is actually very interesting reading. And one of the things you'll find is if you read these, you might actually have things that you have questions about. And I would offer you, if you've read it, to reach out to, through your own processes, to reach out to the department, to the finance department, to raise questions if you have them, or to give them a high five and a gold star for doing a great job. The department officials, your processes include things like the department officials being responsible for sections of the official statement that it fit within their expertise, reading them, providing comments on them, updating them, you know, sending an email that they're signed off on those things. And they provide a fair amount of vigilance and process. Remember, we want to create reasonable processes for getting it right to make sure that your document is as accurate as possible. Because we're looking for two things. It's pretty easy to not misstate the things that you put in. We put in finance numbers. We double check those finance numbers. They're almost always right the first time. But it's the omission. It's the thing that the investor needed to know that we just didn't say. That's where the trap really is. So when we're looking at the official statement, we begin with the big picture, and we never start with it's always going to be the same as last year. So we ask some of these questions, and these are questions that you should ask of yourselves when you're issuing bonds, right? Why are we doing this? Why are we issuing these monies? Often we're refinancing for cost savings. But I think you'll hear that in the future, we're going to issue new bonds, or we're going to be asked to issue new bonds for new projects, new capital projects. How the proceeds be used? What type of securities? Are they short-term? Are they long-term? What's the repayment stream? I was glib about a mortgage. You don't have that. What is pledged? Your revenues are pledged. Are all your revenues pledged? Substantially, yes. Are there circumstances that might interfere with the repayment of security? What else could go wrong? What could go wrong when thinking about this in the short term, long term, and so on? And then we disclose it, and we write a story about those issues so that investors know what they're investing in and they have the risks identified. Some additional questions. What's our financial condition? How are we doing? What options do bondholders have if the revenues aren't sufficient to pay? What do security holders need to know about the information that's being described? And have we identified all the risks? Hot topics. So it's interesting. And if you read one of these documents, or if you've been doing this for 20 years like I have, the things shift. Sometimes we talked about rain, and sometimes we talked about drought. Sometimes we talked about COVID. Sometimes we've talked about other things, but these are some of the hot topics right now. Cybersecurity is a big issue. Climate change is a big issue. AI, and as everybody in politics understands, federal policy and how the feds are dealing with California in particular are super hot topics. Other key topics include ESG, environmental issues, the water authority in particular is being reviewed all the time for how they're doing it on environmental issues. And then pension and post-employment, for as long as I've been doing this, post and pension employment benefits have been a key issue. And thinking about those liabilities in the long term requires a fair amount of disclosure. But we always ask, what issues cross your desk that you think an investor might want to know? And we'd love to know what you think. So, but all this is about creating a disclosure culture and creating internal controls. So having a process in place to make sure that you get these things right, having a department who talks about these things on a regular basis, who's thinking about, hey, what should we be saying to the market right here? We periodically get calls, regularly get calls from Lisa Marie and her team about, you know, is this something we should disclose? Is this something, how should we disclose this if we're going to disclose it? How are we talking to the market in these places? And while Kennedy was saying, every time that one makes a public statement, it could be considered securities disclosure, particularly if there's reasonable reliance by the public on that information being able to be made an investment decision. So we want to make sure that what we say is accurate. That's the easy part, but that we're not omitting to say things that need to be said, and that we have a process in place. It's even more important that we have a process in place to get those to do the best we can to get those things right. So that's your primary disclosure. We talked a little bit about investor relations in that last slide. Then you have this issue of continuing disclosure. In order to issue municipal securities, this rule 15C212 says that the underwriters have to have an arrangement with the issuer of those securities, the water authority, to provide continuing disclosure. That continuing disclosure looks like an annual report that you guys put out. You guys actually doing a really, really thorough job in your annual reporting. And then it has some we used to call them material event notices. Some of them have to be some of them have to be disclosed even if they're not material, but you have some periodic things that if they come up, you need to tell people. But the important thing for this presentation, the anti-fraud rules apply. When we're putting out our continuing disclosure report, we're very careful to make sure that we're meeting the same standards that we try to meet when we're putting out our initial disclosure with the official statement. I mentioned some of those events. The finance department has processes in place to make sure that if any of these things happen that we're talking about filing with the Municipal Securities Disclosure Repository called EMMA, a notice. These things don't happen a lot. Non-payment, you guys don't have that. Modifications to right of bondholders, this is not something you do. Bond calls, we do from time to time. When there's a redemption, redemption just means an early payment of the bonds. Or a release of substitution of property, you guys don't have this happen, but from time to time, other of the things do happen, such as rating changes or the change of the name of a trustee or something along those lines, those things have happened. But we have in place processes, and you ought to encourage the department to have in place processes to make sure that these things are identified and promptly disclosed in accordance with its continuing disclosure obligations. Otherwise, if you don't do that, the consequence is you got to tell investors in the future that you failed to meet your continuing disclosure obligations, and there's a risk that it might hurt your pricing on your bonds in the future, and nobody wants that because that leads to higher water rates, and everybody's here to make sure that we have lower water rates. Procedures to identify financial obligations. One of the things, one of those event notices is that if you incur new financial obligations, you got to make the, you need to make people aware of that and file a notice. So many agencies, including yours, assess their capital needs and they're looking for financial obligations. These are usually typically loans and that sort of things, but they could be hidden in construction contracts and in leases. For some agencies have a big TI allowance on something they're leasing, but we're looking for a process in place to identify those material events, and you guys have done that well, and we hope that you continue to do that. There's also voluntary disclosures. The municipal marketplace, the repository for this information, the EMMA, can receive voluntary disclosures, and from time to time, it makes sense for you to put out a notice. We'll often do that in advance of a financing to let the marketplace know that that financing is coming, that we may or may not do it. It's subject to board approval and those sorts of things. But when we do that, we have the possibility that we're moving a market. And if we're going to move a market, we better comply with our anti-fraud rules. That 10b-5 rule will apply. No material misstatements, no omissions. You guys will be repeating that on your drive home. No material misstatements, no omissions. The SEC has charged folks for involuntary for the voluntary disclosures that were inaccurately done. And back when we had COVID-19 was the hot topic, the SEC actually encouraged people to file disclosures to say how COVID impacts were going to impact their departments or their agencies. So another speaking to the market. This one's very obviously that you're speaking to market. Investors will call and want to talk to water authority officials about, hey, are you issuing new bonds? Maybe they're just looking for business. They'd like to buy those bonds. Maybe they want to know if there's going to be additional debt. Maybe they want to know what that's going to do to affect ratios and that sort of thing. But anytime you're interacting with the investing public, you want to make sure that you're telling a complete story. A good process for that is to kindly take a question and to respond via a notice on EMMA so that all investors can get that information at the same time. In other public securities markets, not the municipal securities markets, there's a regulation called Regulation FD, which says FD stands for Fair Disclosure, which requires the GEs or the American Airlines of the world to put out disclosure at the same time to everybody. You don't have that same rule, but our advice is always to try to emulate those markets and to try to disclose things all at the same time. EMMA is a great place to post that with a voluntary disclosure that answers pressing questions from investors if we're gonna answer those. So we talked a little bit earlier about creating a disclosure culture. creating a place where you talk about making these disclosures in the future, particularly if you have bond issuances or continuing disclosure obligations coming up. So you should establish a disclosure team. You've got that. You have a disclosure team in-house, and you have a disclosure team that has been hired. Each year, review the requirements of your continuing disclosure undertaking. Yours hasn't changed in a long time. And you actually really don't have a very heavy burden, but it's important to take a look at those, gather the required information, coordinate it, review it internally, review it externally, get it approved, make sure everybody who might have feedback on it has a chance to review it and sign off on it. Consider if there's anything else that you need to do. We're always looking for the omission. And then finalize that information and get it posted timely on Emma. You guys do that process well, and we encourage that to continue. The role of the board now. So what as you sit here, I've been telling you what your departments are doing to do this and what your outside counsel and advisors are doing. What's your job here? So your job is you're responsible to ensure that you comply with these securities law. And this offering document is your offering document. And you say, gosh, I can't sit there and type all night. These things, 200-400 pages sometimes. I'm not going to do that work. You don't have to do that work. The SEC says that you can reasonably delegate those things. Your job is to make sure that they have the resources to do it and that you have a reasonable process in place and that you're asking reasonable questions in order to make sure that information is as accurate as possible. So the board may reasonably rely on the advice of its professionals, but it has to exercise independent judgment in approving the securities disclosure. And that independent judgment means ought to read it, and you ought to think about it, and you ought to say something if you see something. A defense based on reliance of professionals doesn't alleviate all potential claims. It definitely doesn't alleviate the defense cost, but you are ultimately able to rely if you've taken reasonable steps. But all understanding, we're in this together, and this is a board document. These are some of the questions you might want to think about. And I think you'll have these slides in your materials. So you'll have them as a cheat sheet next time the securities document has been put forward to you. How is the Water Authority, allocated responsibilities? If you clearly define those responsibilities, what's the processes? What have you done to establish the accuracy of the financial information? Has anything happened since the date that it was put together and the date that we're being asked to approve and the date we're going to publish it? Those are all very fair questions. Interestingly enough, they're also the questions that your underwriters ask on our final due diligence call. So we're usually in a position to answer those questions quite easily. Here are some more. What policies and procedures do you have in place? What procedures have you established to, make sure that the description's right? What about for investment and distribution of proceeds? How are you doing your fund control? Do the procedures permit underwriters to carry out their due diligence? Are you giving everybody a fair chance to make sure that these documents are right? And is there one of my favorite, is there anything else that we should know about these things in order to be able to make a reasonable decision to make an investment decision? So now that you've got this cheat sheet, Lisa Marie will be super happy to have us write up some answers to those. Any event, my name's Tim Reimers. Kennedy joined us. Kendra helped put this together. We're your disclosure counsel team, and we're thrilled to be able to help you guys with what you do. We're huge fans of the work that you guys do and getting to work with you. So, any questions?
Thank you. Thank you so much. We have a question. Go ahead, Director Kirschbaum.
Thank you. So the official statement, is that an annual requirement or is it more frequent?
So the official statement, it'll start with a preliminary official statement, and that is that's the offering document. So anytime you're going to issue new securities, you're going to issue some new bonds, you'll get a book that'll sit about 200-300 pages, and it will include a description of the bonds, what the terms of them are, when they pay, how they pay, what the security is, and that sort of thing. A description of the authority, what does this authority do, why does it do it, where does the water come from, this or that, and then a description of the finances, and then a description of the risk factors, like what could come up, both on the bond structure and like in the economy, in the water world, like what are those risk factors? And that's the when the bonds are being purchased by an investor for the first time, that's the offering document that they're getting. And then on an annual basis, some of the information in that, we contractually agree to update some of that information. And you guys actually provide an annual report that updates well more than what you're required to contractually, but definitely hits what you're required to do contractually. So when you look at your annual report at the end of the year, I'm not calling it by the right name.
Yeah, I just wanted to add that the annual report is actually a document that's included with the ACFR document. So when you're approving our annual financial statements, you're also approving the disclosure documents. It's a nice way to have both key documents together for the investors along with the financial community.
Yeah. And that so that document speaks to the market, and you should read it on the, with a similar eye to, are we saying the things that we need to say about the Water Authority and its financial position and its ability to repay bonds? And you generally do a very good job of that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Any other questions?
Well, thank you for your time.
Tim, I do have one question for you. So first, thank you for being here, you and your team. In the definition of material, I think your team said something to the effect of you're speaking to the market, right? So I was hoping that you could provide some insight on how misstatements in the media or even an AI-generated story may be viewed in the marketplace.
Yeah, so it's an interesting... Yeah, I'd love to. All right, so bear with me for a second. So we used to have this theory, and it still exists. It's called the envelope theory, right? And what it was that if you were Procter & Gamble and you were selling stock, you would have a prospectus, you would have some offering materials, and you'd send that to an investor and you'd stuff it in an envelope. But anything you put in that envelope that you sent to that investor could be considered marketing materials for those bonds. But if you also ran a commercial on television that said that Tide, I think it's Procter & Gamble thing, but that said that your product, you know, cured all ills, that the thing that wasn't in the envelope wasn't considered securities disclosure, right? It was puffery, it was marketing, it was that sort of thing for your product. But what was in the envelope was definitely securities disclosure. We live in a world today where we don't exchange envelopes anymore in the same way. And we've blurred the lines of where we are, what a reasonable investor might be able to rely on. There are investment firms who have AI systems that dig into your minutes and your reports and your contracts and this sort of thing that are really using sophisticated means to try to get a leg up on other folks, because information is key in knowing more than the other people who are trading on your debt, right? So it's becoming harder and harder to decide what's in the envelope and what's outside of the envelope. That's the beginning of the answer to the question. So what all that really means is that it's hard to determine when you're talking in the market. So one should be a little more cautious when speaking about Water Authority things, to make sure that you think that you're talking to the market, if you're going to make statements about Water Authority focused things, that would a reasonable investor be able to take this information and think that they could trade on this information? And if so, then we should have a little bit of a conversation about how to best say what needs to be said. That said, not everything that's said necessarily is reasonable for an investor to rely on. If I'm at a dinner party and just saying, you know, the price of my water bill is just too darn high, I'm not sure that that's something that a reasonable investor should say that they should trade on. It's probably not Water Authority policy or those sorts of things. But I'll give you a little example too of how it gets, how what you do formally protects a little bit about what you do informally. The SEC has said that that if you are doing your regular reporting, if you're putting out your annual reports, if you're doing good continuing disclosure, I'm going to overstate it a little bit, but it'll help make the example. It's not as reasonable for an investor to rely on informal statements. The counterpositive happened in Harrisburg. City of Harrisburg wasn't putting out its continuing disclosure reports. And the mayor got up and made a State of the City speech where they said everything was awesome and nothing was awesome in Harrisburg at the time. Investors, or the SEC, said investors could have traded on that information and it was inaccurate. And it was a political puffery speech. Everybody knew that it wasn't accurate, but because they hadn't done their continuing disclosure reports, because they hadn't done the blocking and tackling and the regular thing, they it became reasonable for investors to rely on the mayor's statements there. So the work that the finance department does on making sure that all the little P's and Q's are minded is important for keeping you away from reasonable reliance by investors, but I wouldn't rely on a world where investors might not say that they relied on statements that were made in other public settings. Was that good enough?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. It's a good lawyer answer, maybe. All right.
Thank you so much, Tim and Kennedy. I appreciate the training for all of us. And I don't see any other hands that are raised for any questions. All right, Vice Chair Arendt.
Yeah, I once heard Donald Rumsfeld make a speech talking about information, intel, and he talked about the known knowns, the known unknowns, and the unknown unknowns. Is there a defense for an agency when something pops up and says, we didn't know this when right. this happened? Is that a line of defense?
Yeah, it's because it all goes back to reasonable. And then, there's two layers for you, right? It goes back to what was reasonable. If you didn't know and you couldn't know it, how can you be held liable for what you couldn't know? Right. It was unknown to everybody. We've had this come up in many instances, but we don't actually end up spending a ton of time on those issues. What we end up spending a ton of time is on the tweeners. Like, is this material? Is it not material? That sort of thing. We kind of have a rule of thumb. If we spend 5 minutes thinking about it, then it's probably material. We ought to say something about it. The other piece is that in creating the cases for liability, your process is as important as the result. So even if you got the statement wrong, but you did all the things to get it right, mm-hmm. that's where a lot of your defense is. Okay. So you want to create good processes and be engaged in that sort of thing. Because you have to be irresponsible before real big liabilities come along. Yeah. Is that helpful?
Thank you.
All right, last chance. Any other questions? All right, so we have three information items on the agenda. There are no closed session items and there's no further business. The ANF committee net meeting is now adjourned. Engineering and operations committee up next in 5 minutes.